depends. It'll be explicitly stated in the problem whether or not that suffices. I'm more precise in the latest homework set, which you can find at the end of chapter 5. So here, for example, the last problem says, you know, find the ring of integers using a computer for part B. And then in the instructions, it says you may use any software. It also says in any problem where you use a computer, including your solution, the exact commands you type and their output.
Okay.
So in some problems you're supposed to, and in some problems you're not supposed to.
Alright, so like on problem set 2, the fifth problem said specifically we could use software.
Right. Yep.
The seventh one did not though, but it's very like defined in order and
it's just an easy, it's just a plain easy problem.
Right.
It's meant to be a very easy problem just to check that you know what an order, what the word order means basically.
Right. Well, I mean the obvious thing to do is just to give the ring of integers because then
right.
the quotient is a trivial group. But
right.
it's hard to compute exactly what that is for a lot of cases.
Right. Maybe that's not actually. Oh, no, there's another. Oh, no, this is not good. There's another plug here, but.
You can try. Just try.
This thing's broken.
Yeah,
try this. This thing on the side. Or go use that thing. Plus chance of failure.
So there are two handouts that you should get. One is the notes for basically Thursday. I don't know if we'll get here today. We might do a little bit of this today. And another is an updated version of Chapter 4. So you should get this and throw away your other copy of Chapter 4.
What did you change?
So I found a couple of typos, and then in the Perry section, I had these wild claims about Perry being vastly faster than magma in a certain computation. But in fact, I had the computation was different. So I was doing a different computation much quicker than magma did a certain computation. So I fixed that. That was the main, it was kind of the punchline, and in fact, it was not correct.
So magma
now
is
there's a, actually, Perry is substantially faster by a factor of 4, but not by a factor of, you know, much more than that. So it's still, the punchline is still similar, but now it's the correct punchline instead of the incorrect punchline with the same conclusion. So it's just that before I had it find the ring of integers of a number field defined by the wrong polynomial by a different one. And now when I made them the same, which is what's in the current notes, and do the timings, Perry is still substantially faster, but not by a ridiculous amount.
Excuse me, I have a question about problem
sure.
one on this.
Yes.
At least the way it's worded, it looks like
maybe yeah, it should be just
ideal.
It should be ideal. Yeah.
Okay.
I changed. The problem is that I it was just a single part with the inverse image of a prime being a prime, and I decided, well, I'll just do an ideal first.
Well,
I forgot to delete the prime part, so it's easy to give a counterexample. So
it
right.
looks like B
Thank
followed trivially from A.
Yeah. It would, except that A is false, so. What's your name?
Gary.
As Gary pointed out, prime should be deleted from part 1A. The word prime should be deleted.
So what we'll do today is continue with this tour. So I'll talk a little bit more about magma, and then I'll talk about Perry. And when we finish that, which I hope we'll do today, probably we'll have a break right when we finish that. Then we'll start with chapter 5. Let me make sure this is visible to you. Here we are again in magma. and I think where I stopped last time was after computing some rings of integers, and I did a little bit with factorization of ideals, but I didn't really demonstrate how to do arithmetic with ideals. By the way, can everybody see this reasonably well? Good. So if you can't, there's plenty of room to sit closer. So now I'll tell you about arithmetic with ideals, and what we'll do is we'll define I'm just worried because it's probably ridiculously slow since it's running on my laptop on battery, so it's running at a slow speed. So I should log into a faster computer. But while I wait to do that, so first define a polynomial ring over the rationals, or the polynomial ring over the rationals. Make an example number field. So in the notes, it has x squared minus 5. That one first. So now we have this number field. So it prints out k is that number field. And now let's do some arithmetic with ideals in this number field. So first I'll define the ring of integers, ok colon equals ring of integers. Okay. Now bear with me for a moment. All I'm doing is going, I'm logging into a much faster computer, starting what we just did, and then I'm going to copy it over. So, sorry about that. Oops. Yeah, push the output. So now we're exactly where we were before, except this is running on a dual Opteron machine, which is very fast. Okay, so we're working in the ring of integers of q adjoined root 5. So maximal order, the ring of integers is 1 plus root 5, is z adjoined 1 plus root 5 over 2. And let's do some arithmetic. So first let's define an ideal, the principal ideal generated by 7. And that's the notation used, 7 times OK. And that defines it. And we can do things with it. So you can print it out, and it says it's a principal ideal generated by 7. The way the generators are printed, they're printed by giving a linear combination of a basis for OK. So OK has a basis OK.1 and OK.2, which, of course, isn't very meaningful unless you coerce back into K. And there you see that the basis is 1 and 1 plus root 5 over 2. So now let's take our ideal I and do something with it. So one thing is we can take its square, you get another ideal. You could define a different ideal j, say the ideal generated by a. So you could first try this, but oh, actually that works now. Okay, good. So j is the principal ideal generated by a being root 5, remember? So now you can do things like I times j. We get a principal ideal generated by 7 times square root of 5. You can say I plus j, and you get the unit ideal because those two ideals are coprime. You can ask for the factorization of each ideal into a product of prime ideals. The ideal generated by 7 is already prime, it stays prime. And the ideal generated by square root of 5, that's also prime. So each one is prime. Notice that, as expected, ideal multiplication is commutative. You get the same thing in both directions. Here's a more interesting factorization. If you say factorization of the principal ideal generated by 11, you get, so this is the factorization of that principal ideal, you get the prime ideal with generators 11, and this means 3 plus 2 times the second generator of OK. OK is generated by 1 and 1 plus root 5 over 2. So the second generator there is 3 plus 2 times 1 plus root 5 over 2. And here's the other one. So the ideal 11 OK is the product of those two prime ideals. So that's a little bit more arithmetic.
You can also work with fractional ideals. So for example, if you take I divided by j, you get a fractional ideal. So you can work in a natural way also with fractional ideals here. So you can do arithmetic with those. So you can make, you know, expressions like 11, okay, so that's some ideal, times I divided by, I don't know, j squared. And it's perfectly meaningful. It does the arithmetic and it simplifies it and writes it as a single thing. This is all kind of boring though, because these ideals are all principal. It's more exciting if you do this sort of arithmetic when the ideals are not principal. So let's choose another number field where arithmetic is more interesting. So let's make it a cubic field, and somebody call it a random number for the coefficient of x squared.
4.
4? Okay, what about x?
-5. Or is it singular?
We'll see. Constant coefficient.
3.
It's unlikely that a random polynomial will be reducible. We're okay. So now I have a number field defined by that cubic polynomial. It's a cubic extension of the rational numbers. So there it is. I'll write the polynomial word x cubed plus 4 x squared minus 5 x plus 3. And because this just came from randomness, probably nobody has any clean idea of what properties you'll have here. Except you can make a few guesses, like probably the Galois group is S3, since usually that's what you get when you choose a random polynomial, etc. Actually, you can ask Galois group of K. Yes, it's S3. So it's a permutation group on three things of order 6. So it's the symmetric group S3. So let's make an ideal in here. And the way we'll cook up ideals in here is we'll take an ideal of the rational numbers, and then so a prime number P, and then factor it. And then you'll get a bunch of prime ideals that appear in the factorization. And all the prime ideals appear that way. If you have any prime ideal of OK, then it appears in the factorization of some prime ideal of the integers. Because if you take a prime ideal P of OK and then intersect it with the integers, you get a usual prime ideal of the integers. And this is just because your first homework problem correctly stated is that the inverse image of a prime ideal is a prime ideal. This intersection is exactly the inverse image of the prime ideal P under the inclusion map from Z into OK. So it's a prime ideal, hence it must be of the form P times Z. And this means that the prime number P is in the prime ideal P, which means that if you look at the factorization of P, one of the divisors is the prime ideal Gothic P. So if you factor prime ideals of the integers, you will find, if you systematically factor 2, then 3, then 5, and so on, you will see in the factorization every single prime ideal of OK appearing. So let's try it. So again, OK is the ring of integers of K. And now let's take the factorization, I'll call it F, the factorization of, by the way, if you don't like American spelling, you can use English spelling also. So let's take the factorization of 2 OK, and there you are, it's a prime ideal already. So we have our number field K, we have OK, and let's draw a little picture here. So here we have 2, that's a prime ideal of the integers, and over it we have the ideal 2 OK, which is still prime. That's what this showed. Now let's do this, now let's see what happens with 3. Factorization of 3 OK. And the result, this is the factorization of 3. It factors as a product of 2 primes. So what this says is that 3 times OK is P1 times P2 squared. So there's 2 primes lying over 3. And one of them is generated by 3 and whatever the second generator of OK is, let's say OK has a basis 1 alpha beta as a Z module, then it's generated by 3 and alpha. And the second one is generated by 3 and 2 plus alpha. And again, a little bit of foreshadowing, we're going to prove a little bit later in the course that every ideal of the ring of integers of a number field is generated by at most two things. So they need not be principal, but they're always generated by at most two things. So you can always represent an ideal as something generated by something and something else. And in the case of a prime ideal, it's generated by a prime and then one other thing. I'm not sure about that. Okay, but you can always generate by two things. I'm not sure that you can take one to be a prime number. That might not be true. Okay, so that's what happens with three. We've now listed three distinct prime ideals of OK. And we can keep this up. We can do it with five. And you get that five is prime. Maybe I'll draw a really big dot here because it doesn't split up at all. By the way, when you have this 2 here, so whenever you have a power of a prime appearing in the factorization of a prime of z, then you say that that prime of z ramifies. And that will only happen for finitely many primes of z. I'll write that down.
So definition. A prime key in the integers ramifies in K if P times OK, if when you look at its product decomposition as a product of primes, one of the EIs is bigger than 1. And the basic facts that we'll prove about ramification, I guess the most important one is that P ramifies if and only if P divides a certain integer called the discriminant of K. And I haven't defined the discriminant of K, but it's a non-zero integer. This is in the integers, and it's not equal to 0. And you get it by taking, oh yes, you have a question?
Is it the same discriminant as in the algebra or some other class that we've seen?
Very likely. But I'll tell you exactly what it is. If you consider OK, there's a bilinear pairing on it, which comes from the trace. So, well, first there's a map that comes from trace from OK to Z, but if you have two elements, you can multiply them together and take the trace of that, and that's an integer. And that gives you a bilinear pairing on OK. So the bilinear pairing is alpha beta. The pairing of that is trace of alpha times beta. And this discriminant is the discriminant of the trace pairing. So you take a basis for OK, and you take all possible pairings of one thing in that basis with something else in that basis. You make a matrix, and this is the determinant of that matrix. It's only well defined up to squares in the. It's only well defined up to units in the. Wait, what am I saying? It's well defined up to squares of units, but the squares of units in the integers is just 1, so it's well defined. So the discriminant is the determinant of the matrix whose entries are the trace of alpha I, alpha j, where alpha 1 through alpha n form a basis for OK. So here's an example. Now, warning, actually, this is wrong. So it gives back a number. If you do this in Magma, what it does is it... So in any book you read on number theory, it'll define the discriminant of a number field to be the discriminant computed relative to a basis for the ring of integers. In Magma, for no particularly good reason, they define the discriminant of the number field in terms of the polynomial you use to define the number field, not in terms of the ring of integers. So if you want to compute the discriminant of the number field as it's defined in number theory, for example, here you have to say discriminant of maximal, or sorry, ring of integers, and then it gives the correct answer, which in this case may very well be the same since I haven't concocted this example in a funny way. But watch. Remember, k was defined by some polynomial. There it is. If we take, we can find another polynomial that defines the same number field by taking the minimal polynomial. There are notes for you. Right there. So a new copy of the notes from last time, and then notes for next time. So if we take the minimal polynomial of 2 times the generator for k, then that's another polynomial. It defines exactly the same number field. It's just the number field defined by 2 times the generator of this number field. And let's call that number field L. What did I do? I don't know what I did wrong. Somehow I've... Well... Okay, so now we've defined the number field L, and the discriminant of L is that number, whereas the discriminant of the ring of integers of L is this number. So be careful of this. It used to be in Magma that discriminant of the number field gave the right thing, and then Klaus Fieker changed it. And I was his office mate in Sydney when he did this, and I got really annoyed, but it didn't have any effect. Because here's the problem. He wants this computation, the discriminant of the polynomial that defines the number field, that's what this computes, is very, very easy. There's a simple formula for the discriminant of a polynomial. To compute the discriminant of the ring of integers is extraordinarily difficult in general. You have to compute the ring of integers. And that's actually a very difficult thing to do. So the reason he changed it this way is so that computing the discriminant of the number field would be fast. It just happens to give you something that disagrees with what you'd expect. Okay, so that was an aside. The relevance is that you have ramification if P divides the discriminant. Yes?
Will they have the same prime divisors?
No. And in fact, let's take a look here. So actually, you can see already, this is an even number, and that one's an odd number. So they don't have the same prime divisors. But they differ by a square. Watch. If you look at the factorization of 76224, and compare that to the factorization of 1191, they differ by a square, namely 64. So, in fact, the difference of the two is the square of the index of the... So this field is defined by adjoining some element to Q, and if you take the order generated by that element, then it's the square of the index of that order in the ring of integers. That's what they differ by. So in this case, the index is 8, which is consistent because we took 2 times a, so we're taking something of degree 3 and we're multiplying the generators by 2, so that will increase the index by 8. Okay, so 397 should ramify also, and it will if we try this. So factorization of 397 times OK. And indeed, look, there's a 2 here. There's an exponent of 2. So this theorem, which we haven't, or this fact, which we haven't proved yet, but will prove, says that 3 and 397, those are the only primes for which when you do the factorization, you'll find an exponent here that's bigger than 1. And indeed, you do find it. So there's an easy, relatively easy way to figure out which of those primes are. If you can compute the ring of integers. But again, computing the ring of integers, as far as we know, is a very difficult problem. All right, so now, are there any questions about magma? Okay, you can ask me later. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about Perry. That's not going to work. Okay. Okay, so here we are in Paris, and so Paris is the sort of this, it's a kind of a small, clean program for doing algebraic number theory computations. That's what it's mainly aimed at. It happens to do a few other things, but those are the main things. It's in some ways much easier to get started with than magma. Magma, you know, just to define a number field in magma, you have to define the rational numbers, then define the polynomial ring over the rational numbers, then write down a polynomial and ask for the number field defined by that polynomial. There's sort of this annoying level of complexity there. With Perry, to define a number field, you just say NF init, and you give a polynomial, and it just works. Also, the system's a lot smaller, so you can get a good idea of how it works and what it does just by hitting question mark. So this list, which is unfortunately in light green for some reason, maybe that's a little clearer. So what this list shows is 13 different topics. If you say question mark and give one of these numbers, you get information about that topic. So for example, some of the simpler things are basic number theoretical functions in section 4. These are things that you might have seen in a course like Math 124, like the Euler phi function or something. So whoops. I just pasted that entire thing in. It's scary. Well, anyways, okay, so question mark gives you a list of topics, and if you say question mark 4, for example, you get information about that topic. And it just gives a big list of all commands related to elementary elementary number theory type things. So, so for example, Euler phi is one of the commands. And if you say question mark and give the command, it will give you help about that command. So for example, Euler phi of 2005 gives you phi of this year. So there's some basic commands like that. Or Fibonacci numbers, you know, all that kind of stuff. So and it computes these things very quickly. But for the purposes of this course, the important part is section 6 and section 5. Mainly section 6. So section 6 has a bunch of functions for doing arithmetic in number fields. And it has a huge number of functions, in fact. So I'll show you, kind of those fly by the screen. Section 5 is about elliptic curves, which is much smaller, and that will be very relevant for the second half of the course. But here are the number field functions. So there they are listed. So there are about 2 pages of these functions. And so this interpreter I'm using, Perry, doesn't really have much in the way of data types. There are a few data types like polynomial, number, I guess integer. But it doesn't have lots of really complicated data types like in magma. In magma, you have an ideal as a data type, a number field as a data type, an elliptic curve as a data type. And then the list goes on and on and on and on and on. And there are probably hundreds, maybe thousands of data types in magma. In Perry, there are something like 5 or 6 or 7, maybe. So for example, a number field, to create it, you just use the nf init command. There's some other commands if you are doing more specialized things. But you create a number field, say like this. So x cubed plus 4x squared minus 5x plus 3. And what it is it's simply a list of more basic objects. So most things in Perry are like that. When you create them, it simply returns a list, and that's all the thing is. It's nothing special. If you were to make this list yourself, it would, it should work in the number field commands as a number field input. So,
is this a finite precision?
What do you mean, like integer arithmetic? Or
well, like here, it's printing a bunch of numbers with really long decimal expansions. Mm-hmm. Like, does it store things symbolically, or?
No, it stores them to finite precision, but it can compute to arbitrarily large precision. So you can set the precision using backslash p, so say to 300, and now internal computations with real numbers are done to 308 significant digits of precision. So I think that if we define this, now it uses that larger amount. So it's a fixed amount, but you can adjust what that fixed amount is. So I'll shrink it to something. Whoops. Only small, like 16. Okay. Okay, so that's how you define a number field. But again, k is not some special, I don't know if there's a type command actually. Yeah, so it's just a vector, that's all it is. Okay, so remember we did some Smith normal forms with magma earlier when I first introduced magma. So let's do the same exact computations with Perry. So you define a matrix in Perry by giving, you give each row and you use a semicolon to go from one row to the next. So this should be a good illustration. So 1, 2, semicolon 3, 4 defines the 2x2 matrix with entries 1, 2, 3, 4. And it's really important to know how to make matrices because, again, there are very few types. So there's matrices and vectors, and if you know how to make them, then you can make them as, you can use them as input to many other functions in Perry. So that's a matrix. And you can, of course, do standard arithmetic on matrices, like raise it to a power. But you can also ask for the Smith normal form. There's a function mat Smith normal form, which takes as input a matrix and outputs its Smith normal form. And this, again, is the documentation. So the output is different than in magma. It just outputs the diagonal entries of the Smith normal form. It's more terse. But if you give a certain flag, an optional flag will output, in addition, the transformation that changes your matrix into Smith normal form. So if we do this, it just gives us the diagonal entries. So that matrix has Smith normal form 2001, which is consistent with the determinant of the matrix being -2. So now let's try some timing. So there's a function called getTime, which, what this does is you call it, and then when you call it again, it tells you the time since it was last called in milliseconds. So if you want it in seconds, you multiply by 1,000. So, and it's the CPU time. So if you call it interactively and then call it again, it's not going to give me a few seconds, it's going to give me 0, because no actual computations occurred between the two calls. So it's the CPU time since the last call. So what we can do is define a little function, like, or a single line. You separate statements by semicolons. If you want something to run more than one line, you have to use a brace to start that block of statements and a closing brace to end it. So I'll illustrate that here. So so this command, matrix nn ij random 101, what that does is it makes a matrix, which is an n by n matrix. The number of rows is n, the number of columns is n. And then you get to give two variable names, I and j, and then the ij entry of the matrix, where I and j now run from 1 through n, is given by this formula, which in this case is choose a random number between 0 and 100 inclusive. So it'll do that, then it will reset the timer, then it will compute the Smith normal form of a, and then on another line, just to illustrate the use of brackets, it'll output the time in seconds. So it says 0, which is good. It's very fast. Notice what the braces do, basically. It just, when it sees braces, it takes everything from when the opening brace starts to when the closing brace ends and puts it all in one line. So kind of everything you do is just one big line. It's just that you can type it on more than one line if you want. Okay, so now we can try something bigger, like a 30 by 30 matrix, and it does that in 0.008 seconds, 50 by 50, 0.063. 100 by 100, 1.4 seconds, and 150 by 150 takes, that one's supposed to take a lot longer. And if you look back in the notes at the magma timings on the same computer using magma, the 150 by 150 took only 1.24 seconds, whereas in Perry it ends up taking about 31 seconds. So Perry's algorithm for computing Smith normal forms is horrible compared to whatever magma does for that same computation. Unfortunately. So if anyone here wants to fix Perry so that it's faster in that particular case, you can because it's open source, etc. I'm sure they'd be very excited to have a better routine for computing Smith normal forms. Let's see, it takes 34 seconds here. Exactly the same computation on a random 150 by 150 matrix in magma on the same computer is about a second and a half. So you have to watch out. There are vast differences in speed, often a factor of 10 or more on exactly the same computation in two competing systems. And 200 by 200 takes a while. I'll just start that one. So actually, notice what it did. It says the stack overflows. So the memory management, if you want to call it that, in Perry is very, very primitive. There's just a single stack whose size is allocated when you start the program. And when variables are created, they're added to the stack. And when enough of them have been created and the stack overflows, that's it. So occasionally stuff can be cleared, but basically it just builds up the stack and then runs out of memory. It's very, very primitive. It doesn't do all kinds of cool reference counting. I mean, calling reference counting cool is kind of a scary thing. It just uses a stack. But the fact that reference counting is better than what they do is kind of scary. So it doesn't do anything really clever from the point of view of memory management. So what happens is you do a computation. If the system runs out of memory, that is to say, if the pre-allocated stack overflows, you have to execute the allocate mem command. And what that does is it doubles the stack and gives you that much free space. And you just do this a few times, and then when you run the computation, it won't, hopefully won't overflow. Hopefully, but you don't know. You just have to keep trying until it works. It's extremely frustrating, but that's the way it works. You can start the program with a large pre-allocated stack, for example, several hundred megs or whatever your computer has. But it's really a very bad design, I think. Magma, on the other hand, just dynamically allocates memory as it needs, frees it, etc. So Perry isn't so good for this particular calculation anyways. If you hit Control-C, it'll stop. Okay, I showed you how to create a number field. Here's another example in the notes in section 4.3.2. Elements of number fields, it's very simple. So you probably all know from any course on fields that if you have a polynomial f of x that's irreducible, and you have a root alpha of f of x, then the number field q adjoined alpha is isomorphic to the ring q of polynomials qx modulo the field generated by f. And you probably all know this, but the reason is just because you can define a homomorphism from the ring on, well, from the polynomial ring q adjoined x to q adjoined alpha by sending x to alpha, and then the kernel is exactly the ideal generated by f. So you have an isomorphism. So in Perry, you think about elements of number fields in terms of this representation. So here we go. So our number field was defined by, or what did I call it? I called it little k. So our number field was defined by that polynomial. By the way, if you say k square brackets 1, you get back the first entry of the list. So let f be that. And then if you want to define an element of this, you say first, to define x, you say mod x comma f. So what this means is I'm letting a be the thing which you should think of as x modulo that cubic. That is to say, it's the class of x in the quotient ring q adjoint x modulo f. So in some sense, this is cumbersome, but it's very fast. It doesn't actually require even defining a number field. You just say mod x comma some polynomial, and you get to work modulo that polynomial. So now you can do arithmetic. If you say a cubed, what will you get, do you think? Wait. Exactly. So you get minus 4x squared plus 5x minus 3. Exactly. It reduces modulo this relation. So you can do arithmetic in the number field. But also, commands that take as input an element of a number field, you give them as input something like this, mod x, some polynomial in A. So for example, there's an ideal factor command. Let's see what the help says about that. It factors an ideal into prime ideals of the number field. So you give as input the number field and the ideal. And there are, in fact, several different ways to give as input an ideal. One is just to give an element of the number field. Then that means the prime ideal, the principal ideal generated by that element. You can give an integer, like 3. That means that's just the same thing as what I did. It's the principal ideal generated by the element. You can also give, so this output, this is a prime ideal and the exponent, and again, a prime ideal and the exponent. This is another representation for ideals in Perry. Ideals are represented in several different ways, and this is another one. Here the representation, so ideal factor outputs a list of, actually it's a two, in this case a matrix, of pairs, a prime ideal and the exponent, and a prime ideal here is represented by giving the rational integer that's in the prime ideal, and I think this is one element of the ring of integers, so that together these generate the ideal. Actually, that's right.
Should say that.
There are additional information about the prime. So there are various interesting invariants that you can attach to a prime in the ring of integers of a number field. For example, So one invariant that you can attach to a prime in the ring of integers is its inertia degree, which is denoted F. So go T and OK, then there are various things to attach to it. F, E, this is the inertia degree. This is the ramification. So I think that this is the ramification. So when you factor an integer, the ramification here will always be the same as this, as the number at the end. But when you factor something up here, it might not have been. So it's a ramification, there's the inertia degree, and that's, see, can I define that at this point? Trying to decide if I can define this at this point. Of course. Well, I'll define this later. So it's a number attached to a prime ideal. And in both of these examples, it's one. But for an unramified prime, it's just this F is just the degree of the extension so if your prime, if E is 1, then it's the degree of this extension. So OK mod P is a finite field. It's an extension of FP, and little f is the degree of that extension. So we could try to find an example where, here's an example. So here, when you factor 5, you have a prime, and the f is 3. So it's one of the other invariants. And the last thing, well, let's just look in the manual. Doesn't say. There's additional documentation for Perry. For example, if you have it set upright on your computer, it will give you, just by hitting double question mark, it'll give you the manual. No, that's not so useful either. It says ideal prime decomposition gives more documentation. Okay, so this has a description of these invariants, or at least of, so it's P, A, E, F, and B. Make that bigger. Okay, so now this is the size I have to use right here. Okay, so the representation in Perry of a prime ideal as output by the factorization function is P, A, E, F, and B. Here P is an integer. The A's give a linear combination of the basis for the ring of integers. That's output by a certain command I'll tell you about in a moment. And then E, F, and B, E is the ramification. F is just the residual index. So that is actually easy. So the residual index is the degree of this extension. It's the degree of the extension of residue class fields. And
B, I have no idea what is B. Okay, so apparently this is something that's very useful in computations. And the definition here is that the inverse of the prime ideal as a fractional ideal is of the form z, the ring of integers plus the last thing, the beta, divided by p. So it says b represents a beta. That means that b is a list, and it's a list of integers, and those integers give a linear combination of the ring of integers, of the basis for the ring of integers, and that linear combination is an element of the ring of integers, so that OK plus beta over P times OK, that is the inverse of your prime ideal as a fractional ideal. And then it says the user can ignore it. So I think because there aren't data types really in Perry, you see all these things in the output, but in many cases they're internal things that are computed about objects, and they really aren't something that you want to worry about too much. They just happen to be useful to cache in order to do computations. So in Magma, those same things might be computed, but they would be stored in somehow a hidden field that isn't printed. So Perry is sort of a, you know, all cards are open type system. By the way, one nice thing about Perry is that it has a reasonably simple to use C library interface. So you can use it from like a straight C program, whereas Magma doesn't have anything like this. All right, so let me show you a little bit more. So as you can see here, you can factor ideals. You can also compute the ring of integers of a number field, so that you use the nf basis command. And what this does is takes as input a polynomial, and then outputs a basis for the number field generated by a root of that polynomial. And there are various flags that you can adjust which have some effect on how the program runs. But it's very simple to use compared to Magma in that if you want a basis for the ring of integers of, say, the number field defined by this polynomial here, you just say nf basis and give the polynomial. And it outputs it just like that. Whereas in Magma, you have to define a polynomial ring, define a number field, define the ring of integers, and then ask for a basis. And then you have to coerce the basis in order to see what it looks like in terms of the number field. Here it just outputs it, which is kind of nice and fast. And remember we had that other polynomial that we got from this one by taking the minimal polynomial of twice a root of this polynomial. So I'll just go back here and get it. Oh, actually, sorry, that was in Magma, so pure poly of 2 times A. So here, it's done it again, but here, when we use this polynomial, so this polynomial has as root twice a root of the other polynomial. So when you compute the ring of integers, you have to, since before a root of the other polynomial generates the ring of integers, here you have to take a half of that root, and that gives you the ring of integers. But this is being written in terms of a root of this polynomial. So you have a half x, whereas this x here, that's supposed to be root of that polynomial. Now, one very interesting thing is that the nf basis command in Perry is substantially faster for the example we tried earlier than the nf basis command in Magma. So, and this was a typo in the previous version of the notes. I hadn't changed the polynomial correctly. But the one we did last time was sum I times x to the I plus 2 times x plus 1. And again, notice that the 2x plus 1 is included in each summand. So really, you're taking the polynomial sum I x to the I plus d times 2x plus 1. D times the quantity 2x plus 1. So do this and then say compute nf basis for f, and then
see how long that took. So, so in order to time things, you surround them by get time. Okay, so what this does is, in order to compute the ring of integers in this degree 10 extension, where the polynomial is that polynomial it just printed out of degree 10, it took 0.011 seconds. So this gives you some conceptual idea of how hard it is to compute rings of integers in number fields. For degree 10, it's no problem. But let's try, at least for degree 10 and small coefficients. If the coefficients are large, though, it could be difficult. So let's try a bigger one, degree 20. That's a lot bigger. And that takes about 1.7 seconds. If you go and look at the magma code, it's not too different there. Actually, in magma, it takes exactly 1.6 seconds also. But peri overtakes magma. So for, say, 22, peri takes 1.5 seconds, and magma took 3.5 seconds. And this is on exactly the same computer. If we try 25, magma took 70 seconds, and in peri it should take about 30 seconds to do this. And if you try 30, I ran that this morning in magma, for 30 in magma it takes 136 seconds, and in peri it takes 33 seconds. So it's four times as fast in peri as in magma to do this particular computation. All right, so are there any questions about peri? Yes?
Can peri extend number fields other than rational numbers?
So do relative extensions?
Yeah, relative extensions and finite field extensions.
So you could do finite field extensions, but it's kind of frustrating. Let's see. Let's see if I can remember how this works. You do something really dumb, like there's a kind of thing, finite field init. So I have to play with this for a second. So let's make a degree 4 extension of F3. So there's a command finite field init. And if you say F equals FF init 3, 4, or more generally P, N, then the result is a polynomial over the finite field FP that's irreducible of the given degree. And now you work modulo that. And that allows you to do arithmetic in that finite field. But it's really not very sophisticated. So you can say mod x, or I guess say x comma f, and now I can do arithmetic there. So for example, a to the fourth gets written in terms of smaller things. So it does arithmetic modulo that polynomial. That's it. And it doesn't do any table lookups or anything. So it's kind of slow.
But what if you want to know, like, for a certain polynomial, what the degree of the extension would be?
Sorry, I don't understand your question.
If you have a certain polynomial and
so do you mean a polynomial over a finite field?
Yes.
So you want to factor the polynomial.
Or find the degree of the extension generated by a root.
It'll just be if the polynomial is irreducible, it's exactly the degree of the polynomial.
If you don't know whether the
you have to factor the polynomial.
Oh.
And there's a command polfactor which does that. So for example here, it should give us, actually maybe it's just factor. I think it's just factor. So factor factors anything. So you can you can just give it a polynomial over a finite field where you have to, it's sort of annoying, but if you say x to the fifth plus, say, I don't know, x squared plus 1, and you want that over the finite field of order 2, you do that, and then you can factor it. So this one doesn't factor, but I don't know. It's kind of hard to make up something that, there, that one will factor. So you can factor, and then the degree of the extension obtained by joining a root of an irreducible polynomial is the degree of that irreducible polynomial. So finite fields and peri aren't really that impressive. It's just, you just work modulo a prime, or you work modulo a polynomial times a prime. But the key thing to know about is FF init. Yes?
Just a silly question. Why do you divide the time by?
Oh, because the time is in milliseconds, and I prefer to think about time in seconds. And the timings that I gave in peri were in magma were in seconds. So that's the reason I divided by 1,000. Yeah. Okay, any other questions about peri? Yes?
Did you mention relative extensions?
Oh, So the problem is, when I learned Perry, it definitely didn't. I think they added a bunch, and probably RNF is relevant. Yes, the answer to your question is yes. So this says, so remember, NF init was for initializing a number field. RNF init is for initializing a relative number field. And what you give is a number field and a polynomial over that number field. And it initializes a relative number field. See the manual for more details. So it's now there. And I think one of the reasons for this is that the main author of Perry initially was Henri Cohen, and he wrote this big book on algorithms for algebraic number theory. And this book really describes in detail most of the algorithms that were in Perry when he wrote the book. Then he wrote his next book on relative extensions and non-trivial class field theory in relative extensions. And then Perry suddenly had relative extensions in it, so you could test out what he did there. But he wrote the second book after I initially learned Perry. But yes, there is relative number field arithmetic in here. Okay, so now we're done with chapter 4. Oh, actually, maybe I should tell you one quick thing before we finish, and that's how to define a function in Perry. It's very simple. If you want to define a function, say, foo of n, you just say foo of n equals, and then you give kind of an arbitrary recipe, and the last thing in the recipe, you give a sequence of commands, and the last thing is what's returned. So you could say print hi, compute, say m equals 7, and you could return, I think you can actually use the return command now, so n times m. So this should just multiply by 7. So now foo of 5, that should be 35. But along the way it can do things, such as print hi or whatever. Now there's one annoying thing, which is that this m is a global variable. It's not local to the function foo. So if you say, you know, you have your own m, which is 1, and then you call the foo function, your m gets changed to 7, which isn't good. There's a way to define local variables local to a function. So you say local of m. I think you give a list of variables like m, y, etc. And now if you say m equals 1 and then you call foo, it should not change the m. See, the m stays as 1. So that's a very important thing to know about, which they kind of added later. Also, if you want your function to span multiple lines, you use braces when defining it. And you can include these in a file. So here we can do a lot of things. Y equals 18, and then return n times y, say. And now our function is allowed to define to span multiple lines. So it's really useful to know about that. And if you include a list of functions in a file, and then say backslash r in the name of the file, you'll load all those functions into Perry so that you can use them. So file name. Okay, and now I'm going to hopefully cut and paste this entire session into a file. Or, I bet there's a way to just save a session. Save history as, that's good. Okay, good. So I can put this session on the web page for the course. Okay, so now what we're going to do is pause for about 3 minutes, and then we'll start on the beginning of the next chapter. Okay? So just meet back here in 3 minutes.
Today's Tuesday, isn't it?
Yes.
I definitely did not realize that it was Tuesday last night. I'm going to set my alarm clock for 10 o'clock.
Yeah. You know there's no AT3 club today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you can come to MIT if you want. There just won't be anything worth doing.
Oh, yeah. Today's Monday at MIT.
Yep.
Exactly.
It means I'm missing classes by being here.
Oh.
That's why Steven's not here, because he couldn't miss his classes. I think they do it so that with all the days we get off throughout the term, it evens out.
Fully.
Yeah.
No, they just have too many days off. I'm not too many, I need the right number.
It's true. Except the fall was kind of cut short. Like, we started late and we had early winter break, so for example, we didn't get our usual suicide holiday in September.
Oh!
Were there any adverse consequences?
That's right, yeah.
I don't think so.
We're
they lucked out.
I remember that, I missed that holiday.
Birds.
Suicide holiday is not the official name.
What do
it's
I have to do for B62?
A pretty significant assignment due 1 month.
Yeah, I've done it. I don't know
good.
What to do. How to turn it in? Like,
oh, you have to email it and you have to hand it in between 1 and 3.
Okay, that's a half day. Good.
Have to email it before the 1.
Where you
yeah,
want?
I got that. This is for the.
What did you write?
Not that you
Yeah.
Well,
you
what
did you write about?
Are you?
I don't
are
even
you
summer?
I just know.
Arts Tuesday. Is this usually Arts Monday? Oh, even the Crimson Peaks are fun. What's up with this?
That's not necessarily like.
This is definitely a Monday Crimson, except it's published on Tuesday. It says Tuesday on it, but it really is a Monday.
Even summer and stuff.
Come.
Huh?
Can't understand. Andre, is this a 4 or 6 or 7?
What?
Those shouldn't sound. Those
shouldn't what's the
right?
Second digit?
4.
That's a 4?
That's
it's a
4.
20 times 5.
Oh.
How
do
you?
Oh,
I get it, because it was. Wait.
Anatolia.
No, I don't get it. I'm thinking of this problem set.
Because it
oh, there was a 7-part problem.
So you put a multiple
seven. Because there's a 7-part problem.
So you always take the LCM?
Yeah.
Does that mean if there's like only 5 problems with no stuff, right? There's like a 5 problem.
105?
Are you
micro
or will?
Will.
You should just make all problems out of 2520 because.
Right.
Yeah.
Out of, like,
no problem
would
have
11
parts, right?
Oh, 5 factorial. I know, not factorial. So, like,
did you surprise me? I did a problem in MIT's Intro to Policy class that had, I think, 22 or 23 parts.
Wow,
that's
bad.
I remember. Is it
really
number?
It was a really stupid, easy problem the first time.
Are you
said, like, which of the following sets include
yes.
Each
okay.
Other various other
I'm just
problems.
Making sure that I put the right homework.
Like, there was
yeah.
Still a lot of them.
So it should have been 24.
Probably.
All right, so let's start with chapter 5. And chapter 5 is about the paradoxically sounding process of factoring primes, which we've been doing a lot already. There's an amusing quote of Bill Gates. The obvious mathematical breakthrough would be development of an easy way to factor large primes. So he's quite excited about the possibility of doing this. You can find this quote on page 265 in this book, The Road Ahead. Where you learn that any person, so he says, the obvious mathematical breakthrough would be development of an easy way to factor large primes. Any person or organization possessing this power could counterfeit money, penetrate any personal, corporate, or government file, and possibly even undermine the security of nations. Which is why we have to be so careful in designing the system, etc. So, if you look at the second edition of the book, he has, you kind of fix things up. So in the second edition, he says, the obvious mathematical breakthrough that would defeat our public key encryption would be the development of an easy way to factor large numbers. So he did fix this quote in the second version. So it's sort of less nonsensical. One thing, though, is, if you were to build a box or find a fast algorithm for factoring, that would not necessarily break the standard crypto systems that are used. It would break the RSA crypto system, but there's another one called Diffie-Hellman, which is based on the difficulty of solving the discrete log problem in a finite field, and that one wouldn't obviously be broken by fast factoring. So there are methods currently for attacking factoring, which very similar methods can be used to attack Diffie-Hellman, but there's no guarantee that a fast factoring algorithm would happen to lead to a fast way to do discrete logarithms. It's a very common misconception that kind of factoring would kill all the crypto systems. That isn't the case. Also, using elliptic curves, you can construct a crypto system which depends on the difficulty of solving the discrete log problem on the group of points on an elliptic curve over a finite field. And this problem doesn't seem at all amenable to factoring. If you could factor it, doesn't there's no reason that that problem would be easier, as far as anyone can tell. If you have a quantum computer, you can. That's really powerful. You can factor, and you can also do discrete logarithms. But again, as far as we know, even if you could factor quickly, you wouldn't break the Diffie-Hellman key exchange, or elliptic curve cryptosystems. And those are elliptic curve cryptosystems are actually used a lot on the internet. And Diffie-Hellman is, for example, used by SSH, so partly at least. So RSA doesn't kill everything. Or factoring does not kill all the cryptosystems, as Gates' book suggests. So really the point of this chapter is to explain how, when I said ideal factor or I said factorization in Perry and Magma respectively, how that algorithm works. And along the way, I want to give you some geometric intuition about how to think about primes and their factorizations in number fields. Okay, first a little more about geometric intuition. So one way to think about the relation between the ring of integers and Z is to consider the corresponding spectrums. So OK has its spectrum, and Z has its spectrum. The spectrum is the set of prime ideals in each case. And it's a topological space. And down here, so the prime ideals here are the ideals generated by zero, and then all the ideals generated by primes, p. So I'll just write ideal generated by 2, ideal generated by 3, and so on. So that's what these are as sets. And there's a map in this direction down, a covering. In fact, in complete generality, if you have two commutative rings, S and R, and a homomorphism from R to S, call it phi, of commutative rings, then there's an induced map from spec of S to spec of R. So whenever you have a homomorphism like this, you get an induced map on specs. And this map is the map that sends a prime ideal P to the inverse image of P under the map, which is also a prime ideal, automatically. So this extension, Z, a subset of OK, induces a map in the other direction on specs. And you should think of each of these as follows. So spec of Z, think of kind of this big, thick line, that's the ideal generated by zero, and then lying on this line, you have 2, 3, 5, 7, and so on. I haven't described the topology here. That's discussed in one of the homework problems. But here, the ideal generated by zero has closure. It's if you take the single the set with this one point in it, the closure of that set in this topology is the entire set. So you think of this big fuzzy line that has these points lying on it. If you take the closure of the line, you get the entire space. And here you have, again, the whole thing, and then on this line you have ideals that lie over 2, and ideals that lie over 3, and ideals that lie over 5, and so on. So you might have, 1,000 of these things that are in the fiber of this map over 2. And those are exactly the primes that appear in the prime factorization of 2, in are the ideal 2 in OK. So these PI, if you count them with multiplicity, then what you have is that 2 times OK is product PI to the EI. These are the primes that lie over 2. So that's the geometric intuition to think about when you think about number fields. Imagine when we're studying rings of integers of number fields, what we're doing is studying certain coverings of spec of Z. Of this one. And
they're fairly nice because OK is integrally closed.
So in the notes, there are some examples of factorizations of ideals. And the crucial thing is to give an algorithm for factoring ideals. So let me give you some sense of how to do that. So here's the conceptual idea to keep in mind if you want to factor ideals, factor prime ideals in rings of integers. So suppose you want to find, well, there are several steps, but the way to break the problem down is as follows. So suppose you want to factor p times ok. So that's our goal. Factor p times ok. So the answer is going to look like the following. You have p times ok is equal to p1 to e1 dot 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 p r to the er. And notice that each of these pi divide p times ok, which means that they contain p times ok. So in particular, each pi contains p. So one problem, which is a subproblem of the problem of factoring, is to find the primes, Gothic p sub I, that contain the rational integer p. So subproblem 1 find all primes p of ok that contain our integer p. And those are exactly the primes that appear in this factorization. So you do that, and after you've done that, then you find the exponents. So you do those in two separate steps. And I'm going to focus almost entirely on the first part of the problem, which is to find the primes that appear in the factorization. I won't worry too much for now about finding the exponents, which for all but finitely many primes are equal to 1. Most of the time, the exponents are all 1. So there's one special case, which you might hope would always would be the general case, but in fact isn't. And the theory that you get by looking at the special case allows you to prove that it doesn't always happen, which is kind of amusing. But the special case is the following. So let's consider this special case. So the special case is when the ring of integers is Z adjoin a single element A, where here A is in our number field. So this is, for example, the case when k is a quadratic extension of q. But when k has larger degree, this can easily fail. Though in our randomly chosen example, this was also the case. But there are examples where this is not the case, where there's no a at all, such that ok is equal to z adjoin a. When this is the case, when ok is just z adjoin a single thing, then you call ok monogenic, because it's generated by one thing. So in this special case, we have the question, find all of the prime ideals that contain p. Well, here's the thing. If a prime ideal contains p, you can find it by first quotienting OK out by p, and then finding the prime ideals of OK mod p OK. And that just boils down to factoring a certain polynomial modulo p. So what is a good way to explain this? Well, so z adjoin A as a ring is just isomorphic to z adjoin X modulo the ideal generated by F, where F is the minimal polynomial of X.
of, I said minimum poly of x by min of a. So f is the minimal polynomial of a, and you have this, so let's suppose we have a prime ideal p that contains our integer p. So suppose p a prime such that little p is in R prime. And now let's try to kind of find a way of computing all of the p's with this property. Then z adjoin a modulo p. Well, you can take this quotient in two steps. Because you know p is an element of this prime, you can write this as z adjoin a quotient out by p, by the ideal generated by p, and take that ring and quotient out by the ideal Gothic p, where really I mean the reduction of Gothic p modulo p. Okay, so right there, that's a crucial step. I'm quotienting out first by the prime number p, and then quotienting out by the ideal p, or at least its reduction. But it doesn't make any difference because in the quotient you get the same thing. It's something that's isomorphic. Now the cool thing is that this quotient you can think about very easily and explicitly, because so z adjoin a modulo the ideal generated by the integer p, that's just the same thing as z adjoin x modulo the ideal generated by f and the integer p, which is the same thing as the finite field fp adjoin x modulo the ideal generated by the reduction of the polynomial f modulo p. And this is really nice and clean. It's just a polynomial ring modulo and a principal ideal, something that you're hopefully familiar with from studying fields. And also you have the Chinese remainder theorem, so this breaks up as a product corresponding to the irreducible factors of f tilde. So if so what you have is that this, by the Chinese remainder theorem, this is a product of fp adjoin x modulo gi tilde to the ei, where f tilde factors as product gi tilde to the ei. So this is the factorization of f modulo p in the polynomial ring fp of x. So it's the prime factorization of f tilde. Now, the question of finding the prime ideals Gothic p with this property is the same as the question of finding all the prime ideals of this product. Yes?
How exactly does it follow from the Chinese remainder theorem?
So there's a general Chinese remainder theorem that says if you have a ring R and two ideals I and j that are co-prime, then R mod I times j is R mod I direct sum R mod j.
Okay.
Okay? And it's a completely general fact about commutative rings and ideals in them. And I'll prove it in the future, in the near future. So it's the Chinese remainder theorem that allows you to go from here to here. And this is, these are ideals. But it's similar to the Chinese remainder theorem you might know from integers, where you have the usual Chinese remainder theorem says that z mod n m, where n and m are co-prime, is isomorphic to z mod n z direct sum z mod m z. So this is exactly the, I'm just using the analog of that, but with integers replaced by polynomials. And the proof is in fact the same. Okay, so the question becomes to find the prime ideals of this ring, and that's pretty straightforward. The prime ideals are bijection with the factors here. So you have one prime ideal corresponding to each of the GIs. So you know the prime ideals of this ring. The prime ideals of this ring are in bijection with the prime ideals of ZA that contain the integer p. Again, it's a general fact about commutative rings that the prime ideals of a ring R that contain an ideal I are in bijection with the prime ideals of R mod I. And that's what I'm using here. I want to figure out what the prime ideals of OK are that contain p. So instead I look at the question, what are the prime ideals of OK modulo p? And those are exactly the same. They're in bijection with the prime ideals of OK that contain P. And the nice thing is that OK modulo P, which is Z adjoin A modulo the ideal generated by P, that is just FP adjoin X modulo this the ideal generated by this polynomial. And if you factor the polynomial somehow, when you're factoring a polynomial over a finite field, that's not a trivial thing, but you can do it pretty quickly in practice. And there are some good algorithms for doing it. But if you can factor your polynomial, then you get a decomposition like this. And from this decomposition, it's pretty easy to figure out what the prime ideals are here. So so what you end up finding is that the prime ideals, Gothic P, that contain P, they're exactly in bijection with the factors of the polynomial F reduced modulo P. And you can also find the exponents in this case, in this nice case, the exponents EI are exactly these exponents EI. So you very explicitly get, in the case when your ring of integers is monogenic, the factorization of a prime ideal, you get the factorization of a prime of Z just by taking the polynomial that defines the ring of integers, the minimal polynomial of a generator for the ring of integers, and factoring it modulo P. So right at the beginning next time, I'll state that as a formal theorem and then more carefully prove it. And then I'll discuss the more general case where the thing is not monogenic. And there there is a fast way of, again, finding the factorization, but it's actually extremely complicated. And I'll give you kind of a hint as to how it works. But it's really strange because it's a very complicated algorithm that's fast. Okay, so I'll see you on Thursday. And remember, get a new copy of Chapter 4's notes if you haven't already.
Was it changed from last time?
The main change was that last time I gave, first there were a number of typos that I found, and second, in the Perry part, I claimed some running times that were too large because I used the wrong examples. So that was the reason. Yes? Yes. And also, the homework assignment for next time is at the back of Chapter 5 of the notes that I just handed out. As usual. Yes, that word prime should not be there. It's not true.